Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tahfouei. Looking at Israeli human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories and the Gaza Strip, Israeli forces conducted 40 incursions into Palestinian communities in the occupied West Bank and 4 incursions in the Gaza Strip for the period between October 18 and October 24th. That's just 1 week. This included the interception of a Gaza-bound Finnish ship named Estelle, stocked with humanitarian supplies, which was intercepted illegally by Israel in international waters, resulting in the arrest of a number of its passengers. And in another violation of international law, construction work continued in Gilo settlement as Israel approved the buildings of 800 new units. In this news analysis, we will look closely at these Israeli violations and the lack of progress made on Palestinians as a whole, which did not even get the attention it deserved at the U.S. presidential debates.
Sirens, blood and tears. This has now become a familiar scene in the Gaza Strip. Concerns are growing that Israel is moving in a direction that would deteriorate the situation in an enclave already struggling after years of siege and military campaigns.
This is a dangerous escalation. It comes after Israeli threats to target the Gaza Strip.
But what does Israel think about an escalation of violence in the region?
You don't let them get away with it. And they know it. That's what we're doing.
While the plight of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip continues amid the silence of the international community, Israel continues to prevent efforts to give a hand to the residents of the Strip. The latest instance of this included the interception of a humanitarian ship, Estella.
There are growing movements in opposition to the kind of crimes we see being committed on a daily basis by the Israelis against the Palestinian people. And we need to translate that rising sentiment into concrete actions that the world's governments cannot ignore.
Washington has almost never reacted in any positive way toward the aggressions by Israel against the residents of the Gaza Strip. A look at the current state of politics shows that American officials want to keep their eyes closed on the atrocities committed by the Israelis against the Palestinians.
Israel is a true friend. It is our greatest ally in the region.
Since it was founded in 1947. We have their back, not just diplomatically, not just culturally, but militarily.
The world still remembers Israel's military campaign against the residents in the Gaza Strip in late 2008 and early 2009. Washington and Israel's other allies largely remain mum on what the world condemned as a war crime. And today, the international community is again worried about whether Israel's escalation of the situation would translate into yet more collective punishment of the Palestinians.
Our guest for this edition of the Press TV News Analysis is human rights activist Aidy Mormick, who joins us from Gaza. We have UN correspondent from the Washington Times, Stuart Stogel, who joins us from New York. And from the Crescent Across Solidarity Movement, Mark Glenn joins us from Idaho. Gentlemen, welcome. Aidy Mormick, starting off with you, since you're in Gaza, the most recent Israeli attack on the Gaza Strip, which was said it's in response to a bomb blast that injured an Israeli army officer. Tell us more about that. And I'd like to add this piece of which our correspondents talked about earlier, who said it was alarming the type of weaponry that was used by Israel, U.S.-made shells, flechés, as he described it. I guess they're like darts, disperses thousands of them, of these darts when it comes to contact with human skin, of which then it explodes. And of course, that's reminiscent of those phosphorus shells, in a sense, that was used in the Gaza War.
Yeah, I mean, there are many weapons that Israel tries on the both civilian population of the Gaza Strip, and one of those is these flechette bombs. They have been used before, though. Actually, we actually went to a place, a house that was shelled with the same flechettes in Jur al-Dik, and a woman was killed, a mother of five children, and this was with these flechette shells that fire many different sort of darts, small darts from shells as they come in. All other sorts of weapons have been used on the people here in Gaza. Remember that the majority of the population are children, 1.7 million people here. And people are very, very apprehensive right now in light of the recent attacks. I was hearing continuous shelling from my bedroom window earlier on this morning, and there was continuous bombs for a good 40 minutes. And this is a heightening period of concern for people here in Gaza. Many people are talking about taking cover. Some people are talking about sending their children out of the strip. And even NGOs are being called out of the Gaza Strip as we speak, because there is a concern that this might develop into another horrific cast lead, which killed 1,400 people and over 300 children. This is what happens when the international community does not do enough to rein in the continuous attacks from Israel. It's as if to say Israel is searching for any kind of provocation so it can commit some of the most brutal atrocities, which includes white phosphorus, all sorts of chemical weapons that have destroyed all kinds of the crops and the plant life, not to mention the rising cancers amongst children and men and women here in Gaza since the war. So we're still suffering the consequences of the previous war, and now we're faced with deep concerns that there's going to be another one, and who knows how many might get killed. Who knows who's alive today that may not be alive tomorrow or the next day in light of the current attacks. And I just wish the world would have done something earlier so that this would be more easily preventable, because now we're faced with another crisis situation potentially.
Stuart Sogol, why don't you give us your thoughts in reaction to what our guest there from the Gaza Strip mentioned. I mean, as a whole, when we're looking at this siege that is now a fifth year, and also it's a maritime blockade, and add that to that, the most recent report that I believe a branch of the UN came out with that said beyond the year 2020, Gaza is not going to be livable.
Well, Mike, one first question I'd like to ask is, how many rockets started in Gaza, or how many rockets were fired from Gaza into Israel? It's a two-way street.
Does that justify the siege that's been going on for 5 years, not to mention the living conditions, of which, again, that report is pretty telling? Beyond the year 2020, it's not going to be livable, and the year 2016, there's not going to be drinkable water in the Gaza Strip.
Look, the Israelis have offered to sit down at the peace table again with the Palestinian representatives. At this point, there have been no talks because the Palestinian Authority does not want any talks. So there is an offer to sit down and talk. It's the Palestinians, not the Israelis, who've refused to talk.
Mark Glenn, do you agree?
This man is delusional. He is just part of the propaganda machinery of the West, and in particular in Washington and New York, that is out to always make Israel the victim in everything. The fact of the matter is that Israel is a very abnormal player in all of this, and she has to have, as Mordecai Vanunu once stated to me personally, Israel has to be in a constant state of warfare with her neighboring countries, lest she fall apart from her own intrinsic and organic frailties as a nation. So these talking points that the individual there has listed about Israel wanting to talk, the only kind of discussion that Israel engages in is violence. When there have been offers in the past to mediate things in a peaceful way, Israel doesn't want to have anything to do with that, because there's no way to grab more land and to dehumanize people through the process of negotiation. It has to be done with violence and as much violence as possible.
Well, Eddie Morwick, unfortunately, if it wasn't for people like you, an activist, of which there are a few in the Gaza Strip, reporting on what is going on there, and at the same time, of course, your humanitarian efforts there, the Gaza Strip doesn't really get much news. Tell us your thoughts on that. And at the same time, what types of daily experiences do you have in the Gaza Strip, which just shows how dire the situation is there?
Well, I mean, on a general level, you don't see the real heartache behind the statistics, and that is what you would most experience here. And you almost absorb the heartache from people here who have experienced loss, and everybody has experienced loss. Everybody's experienced people rotting in Israeli jails for, let's face it, resisting military occupation, the longest running military occupation in modern history. And so as long as people are going through this, How on earth are they expected to live a normal life and seek some kind of solace and seek any kind of freedom? I mean, the sense that, I mean, if you looked at the previous attacks on Gaza, which killed so many in the 3 weeks over 2008, 2009 New Year, obviously it was Israel that broke the ceasefire first. They even the CNN reported this, for goodness sake. And once again, we've seen 8 deaths in the last few days. There's how many casualties on the Israeli side for the last few months have been nothing like that. And this is always the same situation. The amount of killings and carnage is horrifying, and people are going through heartache all the time. And we are experiencing this from all people all around us. And who knows what we'll face ourselves when if there's a current escalation. I mean, the peace process is a complete sham. Palestinians, how on earth can they expect to come to the negotiation table when for the past 19 years of the peace process, Israel has multiplied the number of illegal settlements all over the West Bank, destroying the possibility of a Palestinian state and continuing to construct illegal settlements right now as we speak? What kind of movement towards peace? What kind of sham is the peace process? How much is Oslo a completely redundant force when absolutely nothing is going towards any kind of peace from Israel's own actions? These activities of killing continuously. Everybody talks about Sderot. Why don't they talk about Bani Sahela? Why don't they talk about Beit Lahia? Why don't they talk about Beit Hanun, where there's far more casualties? In fact, there was more casualties from one family, the Samouni family, in the attacks on Gaza during the Gaza War, than all the victims of the Israeli rocket, of the Palestinian rockets for the past 10 years. So where is the justice in this? What kind of fear should people expect here, given the amount of casualties that are going on, not to mention the illegal siege, which is collective punishment of a population of which the majority are children? I mean, we're going to look back with shame on this, that we're not doing anything about it, and we're giving Israel the green light again to commit mass terror to the Gaza Strip.
Well, Stuart Sogol, I think the landscape of the Gaza Strip has been somewhat painted in this small exchange. Let's move on to the occupied territories. Construction work has continued in Gilo settlement. Israel has approved the building of 800 new units there. Prime Minister Netanyahu visited Gilo ahead of EU's Ashen visit and insisted that Israel has a full rights to build in its eternal capital. Isn't this against international law, condemned by EU, the United States, the UN? And if so, why does it continue?
Well, I'm not here to defend Israelis building settlements on the West Bank. However, I will say that, again, if the Palestinians have problems with this, let them come to the negotiating table. Let them call the Israelis bluff. Put the pressure on the Israelis. By avoiding contact with the Israelis, it gives Bibi Netanyahu carte blanche to do what he wants. So Mahmoud Abbas bears as much responsibility for what's going on the West Bank as Bibi Netanyahu. If the Palestinians believe they've got legitimate grievances, let them come to the table and call the Israelis bluff. The longer they refuse to do this, the longer the Israelis can do what they want and not be challenged.
Mark Glenn, our guest there, Stuart Sogol, says that as long as the PA, with its acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas, refuses to come to the negotiating table, it gives a right for Israel to continue what they're doing.
It would make any difference if Palestinians came to the negotiating table as they have now for the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Israel would find some reason to impose stipulations on this meeting so that either it did not take place or so that it would be like a car with 4 flat tires, that it wouldn't go anywhere. So this is just more theatrics. This is more playing with words. Again, to make Israel out to be the reasonable player in all of this when this isn't the case at all. The fact of the matter is that we have a nation that is founded on a very backwards religious and political ideology that owns all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers. And so all of this talk of peace and negotiations, all that, this is just a smokescreen so that Israel can be given more time to situate herself in the region so that she can create more instability and so that she can grab more land. When Netanyahu talks about Jerusalem being the capital, the undivided capital of Israel, he's saying this from a religious viewpoint because it is within their Old Testament teachings that the Jews are supposed to seize, control, and occupy all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates rivers, and Jerusalem just happens to be one of those locales. And this is the kind of thing that really should, especially at this period in history, should scare the rest of the world to death, because Israel is not simply talking about occupying some little sliver of land the size of Rhode Island, but rather a size of territory that's four times the land mass of Texas. And what Benjamin Netanyahu and others like him are saying here in coded language, and which he has said explicitly, actually, in a recent interview, is that we're going to be at war like this for the next 100 years in order to bring about this thing known as Greater Israel.
Eddie Morick, recently there was this a Finnish Gaza-bound ship with 30 people on board, of which it was intercepted by Israel. And, of course, aside from the bad treatment that they got when it got intercepted, Israel is using a maritime blockade that's illegal because this ship was in international waters. And this is not the first time this has happened. Tell us about your impression of that, given the fact that what they were carrying is humanitarian supplies for the besieged people in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, I mean, I was on a similar boat, the Spirit of Humanity, 3 years ago, and they roughed us up, they pushed us around, they hijacked the whole boat. There was a Nobel Peace Prize winner on board. There was a former U.S. Congresswoman, Cynthia McKinney. They didn't care at all. They just took the whole lot. They took complete control of the boat. Now they're not worrying so much about whether we enter Gaza waters. This was in international waters. There's not many countries that can get away with this when it's evidently a civilian boat that had been carefully checked before leaving ports and was obviously full of people that were wanting to reach the Gaza Strip. And they're trying to delegitimize this completely illegal siege on a civilian population. And it's come out recently that the government of Israel was actually having a calorie count on Palestinians that was a lot lower than the minimum required nutrition levels that people should have. That's how much they want to control each person here in Gaza. And it's come out recently as well that it was actually they admitted to collective punishment. It was to try and harm the population, to force them to not follow, to not make independent decisions that Israel doesn't want them to make. So it's really a pretty grim, horrific situation. And this attack on the Estelle was not surprising. It's another example of just the lengths they're willing to go to keep these people in this open air prison that's the Gaza Strip. I mean, I just hope that people look up and see what's going on. And this is another example that will finally penetrate the consciousness of people in the West, because it's there where really the argument needs to be won most, because this is where we've been fed the Israeli propaganda for so long. Israel is an occupying force. It has been for the past 60-odd years over much of Palestine, and it's now committing more violent crimes than ever before. I mean, at what point do we say enough is enough? And really, the global movements, the civil society, popular resistance here in Palestine, the Arab Spring and grassroots movements in the Arab world, really, it's starting. It's starting. They're starting to isolate Israel. And eventually, we hope that it will be the kind of movement, the kind of mass movement that will say no more outrage, no more inequality, no more dehumanization and apartheid of Palestinian civilians. It's time. It's time that enough is enough. And we will hold them to account. And eventually, it will reach the governments, just like the anti-apartheid movement against South Africa did.
So we'd still like to get your idea about these presidential debates. I'm sure you're catching a glimpse of it. The Mideast peace process barely got a mention. In the final debate, we can say as an example, why do you think that is? Some are saying, would an American standing in the Middle East be doomed without a greater effort to resolve this Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
Well, the Palestinian issue is probably not going to come to the front burner for the rest of the remaining 2 weeks before the American elections. It's a sensitive subject, and there was a lot of friction between both Obama and Mitt Romney. One reason being Mitt Romney goes back almost 30 years with Bibi Netanyahu when they were both college graduates. So the personal relationship seems to have put a damper on a distinctive discussion or a true discussion of the Middle East process. However, what I'd like to ask your guests is very simple. Number one, between 1948 and 1967, the Gaza Strip and the West Bank were occupied by Egypt and Jordan, and even by Syria to a degree. Why weren't the complaints lodged against those nations when they had control of the contested areas? And number two, insofar as humanitarian goods getting into Gaza, there is a UN official by the name of Valerie Amos. She is the UN coordinator for humanitarian affairs. They could have routed those same humanitarian goods through Valerie Amos. Valerie Amos could have gotten those goods into Gaza, and if the Israelis stopped it, then the confrontation would have been between the UN and the Israelis rather than the Gaza residents and the Israelis, and that would have raised it to a much higher level and could have involved the Security Council. So why did the people on this boat flotilla of last week not go to Valerie Amos? Why did they try and turn a humanitarian effort into a political stunt?
Mark Glenn, do you have an answer for that question?
Yeah, perfect description for what we just heard on the part of the who mixes fact with fiction, students, listeners of this program, and to leave them scratching their heads. The reason why they were not protesting when Egypt and Syria occupied these lands is that Egypt and Syria were not butchering these people simply because of the fact that they happen to be non-Arabs or non-Muslims. What is going on here is that Benjamin Netanyahu and the entire Israeli project from the beginning has been about robbing the Arabs of their land and pushing them out to bring about this thing known as Greater Israel. And what we just heard here on the part of this journalist is nothing but more typical Zionist obfuscation and confusion so that the world cannot get an accurate picture as to what is taking place. It's very simple here. We're dealing with a gangster regime who does not have any regard for international law or any other law other than the one they have written themselves. And if that means every land can have it, they're going to do it.
Seems like we are having a problem there audio-wise with Mark Glenn. Eddie Morbick, I'd like to close this program with you. You have been there for quite some time. Tell us, if you can, of a couple accounts that has, how can I say, that has broken your heart, that has seen you tremble of some of the sights and scenes that you may have seen there in the Gaza Strip that you want the world to hear and know about.
Yeah, well, I've been spending some time in the Jabalia camp, actually, which is one of the most crowded places on the planet. It's a square mile. There's about 100,000 people inside it. It's a tiny camp, and it's very tight. I've been speaking with a guy called Ziad. He lost 11 family members in the attacks on Gaza. He's now in a wheelchair. He's trying to live his life as a photographer. I'm always amazed by how people are continuing, even though they've had this heartache. I asked him, where does he get his hope from? He said that there's no hope. He doesn't say there's hope, but he just has no choice but to carry on for those around him, for his family, and for his community. And it's that kind of step by step, moving day to day, that keeps people going. It's incredibly harsh. I still teach at the Samouni family, and those kids are growing up now. It's been a couple of years. You know, I asked Mona what her message was to the outside world, and she lost. She said, "Please take care of your parents because I lost both of mine, and I can't care for them anymore." This is a constant reminder to us of what is going through these kids' minds every day, and a lot of these kids. From what I heard just in the taxi drive, he said his kids were under the bed this morning, hiding from the attacks.
Okay. I'm sorry to jump in, Eddie Morbick. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you very much. Eddie Morbick there, human rights activist from Gaza. I'd like to thank UN correspondent for the Washington Times, Stuart Stogel from New York. Thank you for your comments. And from the Crescent Across Solidarity Movement, Mark Glenn from Idaho. And thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. From Mika Vatahwe, entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.